You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire. With the US presidential election on the horizon, the stakes of the fight for the youth vote are higher than ever. Today, I speak to Professor of History at the University of Auckland, Jennifer Frost, about the historical suppression of the youth vote in the United States, including grassroots movements fighting for the vote, passed bills, and the significance of the 26th Amendment. Here is that interview. What's happening in the United States with the youth vote at the moment? Are states actively suppressing youth voting rights?
Thank you. I think it's a very important question. And actually, as a historian, it's important to point out that, in fact, the youth vote has been suppressed since the beginning. So even when, you know, young people could vote through the 26th Amendment, which gets passed and ratified in 1971, immediately different areas of the country started moving against young people voting in various ways, making it harder for them to vote. And in fact, one of the main ways that that happened and still happens today is around residency requirements. Because voting requirements are set by the locality and by the state, some states, some cities will have residence requirements that say you have to be in that state a certain period of time to be able to vote, or it has to be your permanent home to be able to vote. And so that has been a way of suppressing students voting for a long time, university students voting for a long time, even before the 26th Amendment. Because if you went away to school, you went to a university in another state or another town, you wouldn't be able to establish residency to be able to vote. And what local election officials would say, well, go back home to vote. But in the U.S., the vote is on a weekday, on a Tuesday, usually. The general elections are always on Tuesday. And so if you're a student and you're studying, it's not going to be easy to get back home to be able to vote. And getting, you know, the mail-in votes or being able to vote from a distance isn't easy to do. So that has been going on for a long time. It is still going on in different states that do not want young people to be voting in great numbers. Mm-hmm. The other way in which the youth vote is being suppressed is through voter ID laws. So different states have very strict voter ID laws where only a certain kind of ID can be used. And you have states where actually a gun license counts for a voter ID, but a student ID doesn't count.
That's incredible.
It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And a lot of young people in the United States don't have a driver's license. They don't drive, especially if they live in cities. And so that's a problem too. Now, one of the big things to point out is because voter requirements and qualifications are handled locally, other than a few sort of things that we could talk about later, but it means that it's a patchwork. So some states and localities are very open. So the so-called blue states that are run by Democratic leadership, they've actually been opening up voting rights in all sorts of ways for young people and everybody. And then the so-called red states, which are dominated by Republican political leadership, they're clamping down. So you could go from one state and not be able to vote for various reasons and then walk into another state and be able to vote. So it's very inconsistent.
Would you call this age discrimination?
Ooh, very good question. So in the 2020 election leading up to that, a lot of states, and Texas was the lead one because of COVID, said you could get an absentee ballot if you were 65 or over. Because the idea there was they didn't want older people to risk their health by coming and voting in person. And so there was a case that went all the way to the Supreme Court that said, this is age discrimination. You know, why is it only 65 and over? You know, anybody could get COVID. And so we all should be able to request an absentee ballot. And it goes to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court decided not to hear it. But one of the statements on the case came from Justice Sotomayor, and she said, this case raises really interesting questions about the 26th Amendment, because the 26th Amendment, which I mentioned earlier, that passed in 1971, it says you cannot deny the vote on account of age if somebody's 18 years old or up. And so we think of the 26th Amendment as mainly giving the right to vote to 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, right? So that's the main thing it's remembered for. But it also says you can't discriminate on the basis of age.
Right.
And so she said the 26th Amendment is something that could potentially be used in a case like this. Yeah, so it's really interesting.
Have aspects of the 26th Amendment been suppressed, do you think, by certain parties in the United States? Like, is it common knowledge that there are points in this part of the amendment about not discriminating by age?
Yes. Well, it's not widely known.
No.
But for sure, the voting rights advocates and also the voting rights lawyers are using the 26th Amendment. So one case that is pending is in Idaho, and they are making the case that these requirements that you can't use a student ID discriminates on the basis of age. And so it'll be interesting to see how these cases go. And one of the things that's really important, just for context, in the United States, there's no affirmative right to vote anywhere in the U.S. Constitution. The U.S. Constitution does not say that citizens have an affirmative right to vote. It says that they have a right to have a Republican form of government, meaning small r, meaning that they should have a voice in their government, but it doesn't say you have a right to vote. And all the amendments, including the 26th Amendment, but also the 15th Amendment and the 19th Amendment, say that you can't discriminate in the right to vote on certain bases. So the 15th Amendment is that you can't prohibit the right to vote on the basis of race. The 19th, that you can't on the basis of sex. So that gave the right to vote to women, and the 15th to African-American men, actually. And then, of course, the 26th, you can't discriminate on the basis of age. But there's nowhere where it says every citizen above 18 has the right to vote. That doesn't exist in the U.S. And so all these states and localities can find other ways to suppress the vote that might not break the law.
Mm.
And yeah, so it's very tricky.
So that's where we see these kind of like hurdles be brought in, and these sort of small, well, not really small, but these difficulties that youth voters face, like, you know, having to be in a certain state at the time, or living with your parents or something.
That's right. There's no place in the Constitution that says you can't discriminate on the basis of length of residency, right?
Yeah.
Right. So that's the problem. That's the problem. So John Ossoff, who's a senator from Georgia and quite young, he basically proposed a law last year that was the right to vote law, that said it'd be really good if we had a law that said you have a right to vote.
Yeah.
But, you know, it didn't go anywhere in this atmosphere that we have in the U.S.
Mm. And also, it would need to sort of be like implemented on a widespread scale, right? Like, I mean, it may be easier to vote in a blue state, but how is this, you know, put through on a wide scale?
Yeah, I mean, that's the argument for any kind of national federal voting rights legislation. So even going back to the 15th Amendment or the, you know, 19th Amendment, the argument has all in the 26th Amendment, it always has been, we need to pass this at the national federal level. Because of that patchwork, it's inconsistent. And the 14th Amendment says that all American citizens have the equal protection of the laws. So that means wherever I live, I should have the equal protection of the laws. And so there have been cases that said it's not fair that I can vote at one age in one state and not vote at another age in that state. Or there's some states that back in the day you could vote as a woman, but other states you couldn't. So that inconsistency, the kind of advocates of voting rights have said, violates that equal protection of the laws. And you could argue that here today. Same kind of things are happening.
Mm, yeah, there's certainly been a resurgence of Trumpian style thinking surrounding, well, a whole range of issues, but particularly social issues. I think we've sort of seen a regression.
Absolutely. Well, and that would be an example with reproductive rights. You know, in one state you can have an abortion and in other states you can't, right? So that inconsistency means that not all American citizens get the same collection of rights.
And it's increasingly polarizing as well.
That's right. Absolutely. You know, and then you have even things like gun rights. So some of the gun rights people are saying, you know, in Texas, I can have open carry, right, where I can just carry a gun openly, but I can't do that in California. That's a violation of my rights, you know. So, I mean, it goes every which way, you know, this inconsistency.
Right. Are there grassroots movements and organizations fighting for the youth vote in the United States?
Oh, it's tremendous. And I can't, I mean, there's just so many.
Yeah.
And what's fantastic, I mean, it's exciting because it's been very, you know, fairly recent. So, you know, right after the 26th Amendment passed, there was a great effort to register youth voters and make sure that they could get out to vote and things like that. And there was a relatively great turnout for the first time. And then the youth vote just declined, you know, so young people didn't register and didn't come out to vote. And then what was interesting is when young people felt something was really at stake, they did. So you get a surge of youth voting in the 1992 presidential election. That was when Bill Clinton got elected, in 2008 when Barack Obama did. But then since Trump got elected, even in what we would call off-year elections or midterm elections, young people have been registering and turning out at greater numbers than they had, you know, since the early 70s. And it is very much feeling that there is something at stake here, and also that there are politicians that are speaking to, you know, young people's issues and concerns. So since 2018, which was the midterm elections, and then 20, and then 22, and then, you know, last year as well, we've seen greater numbers of young people voting and being mobilized to vote, and youth vote spokespeople. So not adults saying you should vote. It's tons of younger people who've taken the lead on this. And, you know, really making the argument that this is our only tool in a democracy to really have our voice heard. We can protest, you know, we could write letters, but voting and running for office is really important. And there's a fantastic young man, Maxwell Frost, who is the first Gen Z member of Congress. And, you know, it's just fantastic having these young leaders being able to be out front advocating for issues of concern for the future and for their generation.
Absolutely. Particularly considering, I feel, that politics tends to be dominated by, you know, an older generation. We don't see a lot of youth represented in parliament.
That's right. I mean, and, you know, in the U.S., it's very old.
Yeah.
Actually, New Zealand is on the younger side compared to the U.S.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's absolutely vital. What's really good, though, and I do think it is, you know, it's young people have always been disproportionately involved in, you know, kind of community organizing, protest politics, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, young people would be out for, you know, for decades out doing these kinds of political activism, which we know is absolutely important. But participating in the, you know, traditional electoral political sphere was something that was seen as, you know, this isn't going to get us what we want. And I think, and really Bernie Sanders is super helpful here, but, you know, coming off of Obama when there was so much optimism that change could happen and, you know, he was younger, et cetera, and then we didn't get the kind of change that we wanted, that many people hoped, it was saying, you know what, we need to create the kind of political, you know, system and power that gets things done. So in the U.S., because it's not the parliamentary system where you get elected and you enact your program, right? It's actually, I'm sorry, New Zealand makes much more sense to me, right? What happens in the U.S., you get somebody like Obama elected, but then he's fighting with Congress the entire time.
Yeah.
And can't get done what he wants to get done. And so I think what young people and, you know, and middle-aged people too, just realize we've got to run for things. We've got to get more involved. And I think that's only accelerated since the Trump years.
Yeah.
As people have just said, if we don't do it, nobody's going to do it, you know.
What would need to happen for a bill to be put forward and accepted and rolled out in the United States?
Oh my gosh, it is so complicated. And I think the best way to think about this is the U.S. system, because, you know, it's like I said, it's this patchwork, right? So
yeah.
We've got cities, we've got counties, we've got states, and then we've got the federal, you know, national government, right? So at every level, you have different government school boards even. Actually, it's very interesting. A number of school boards have been passing laws to let 16-year-olds vote. In the school board elections, because obviously young people care about their schooling and their education. So you do have that happening. So at all these levels, you can have this hodgepodge of different kinds of things. But at the federal level, which would then, you know, ideally it goes throughout the whole nation, the system has these built-in, we would call kind of anti-majoritarian mechanisms. So, for example, in the Senate, to get things through, you actually need 60 votes out of 100, not 50 or 51. And so in a country that's very evenly divided between, you know, Democrats and Republicans, it's very hard to get, you know, on either side, you know, try to get 10 of the other party to come across. And then at least in the House of Representatives, that is majority. But right now we have a majority Republican House. And so nothing's happening on voting rights at all. So John Ossoff's wonderful right to vote, you know, bill has just languished. And actually in the House, there was a bill to lower the voting age to 16, and that also languished.
Right. Yeah, I guess those grassroots movements are just so important then, you know, to be fighting for the right, you know, on a community-based level.
Absolutely. And actually, I'm convinced now with, you know, so much disinformation and misinformation, you know, through social media and all this, I am absolutely convinced that the way we reach people is one-to-one. I feel like we got to go back to these old, you know, ways in which we do things. And in fact, that's what these grassroots, you know, youth vote, Gen Z, Generation Citizen, I mean, there's just lots of them active. And they're, you know, going to schools, knocking on doors to get young people to vote, going to concerts, right? I mean,
yeah.
One of the great examples of this is Taylor Swift. I mean, one reason why there's such a controversy over her is that on National Voter Registration Day, which is in September, she posted on Instagram, oh, National Voter Registration Day, you know, why don't you think about, you know, voting? And so, of course, the word goes out to, you know, everybody who follows her on Instagram. And the statistics were incredible. It was something like, on average, 13,000 registrations occurred every 30 minutes for about 24 hours after she put that out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just incredible. So, and she just said, you know, I've heard you raise your voices and I know how powerful they are. You know, make sure you're ready to use them in our elections this year. So it shows that these kind of influencers or celebrities, as well as grassroots organizing, we have to directly encourage young people to participate and then help them through it, especially if there's a maze of regulations that they have to, you know, deal with. And you know, having people who can help you do that is really important.
That was Professor of History at the University of Auckland, Jennifer Frost, speaking to me about the historical suppression of the youth vote in the United States in light of the upcoming US presidential election.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.